Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, Crossing Streams Edition, the episodes where we talk about things that we've been streaming on various streaming networks, various movies that we've checked out that you guys might want to check out. We don't know. We don't know what you're into. We assume you're into some similar things because you're listening to this.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, if you're listening to here, you like to stream some things. You've streamed a couple streams.
Yeah.
I streamed a stream.
And originally, if you guys didn't know,
I streamed a stream of time.
Nice. I knew Andy would get what I was going for.
This was supposed to be like a Ghostbusters joke, right? Mixed with a double entendre, if you will, with our show title. But anywhoozle, yeah, we talk about some different things that we've been watching since last we met. So thank you to everyone listening. We very much appreciate that. Got a ton of emails. By the time you're listening to this, you will have heard our mailbag part deux. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, Steve?
That is correct.
Steve's our master. So he's posted that. So thank you to all those. Keep sending in your emails and we may do more Stranger Things coverage. We don't plan on it unless we've got some big things in the works.
There are some big maybes that we can't announce yet, but if they happen, holy shit.
Yes. Then there will be a ton more awesome Stranger Things content, but we don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. So just know that in extreme vagueness, maybe.
Yeah, we want to not promise, but blow your minds.
Yeah, that's what we do in our love lives and in everywhere. And my boss, whenever I interview for a job, right, they're like, hey, what is your experience? I'm like, absolutely zero.
I suck.
I doubt I'll show up. And then if I somehow get it, they're like, whoa, once
well,
they see me work.
50% more than he said he was going to do.
You seem to be crushing it.
Dude.
And that's what's important.
Dude, so crushing it. Have you seen what I owe the IRS? So crushing it. I'm making the payments. So keep those emails coming. And you can do so by emailing streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That's streamingthingspod@gmail.com. You can also interact with us on the Twitter @streamthingpod. That's @streamthingpod. Slide up in our DMs. We like that a lot. We can respond to our fans and get show recommendations and movies that we might have missed, stuff like that. That's really fun. Mm-hmm. You can follow me personally on Twitter @moviesaretherapy.
You can follow me @AndyMostDays.
And you can follow me @SteveMay13.
Steve May, the 13th of his name. You can also subscribe to our Patreon and get some extra bonus content. If you like what we do here, go to patreon.com/streamingthings. That's patreon.com/streamingthings.
And if you do that, you can take part in polls, get extra content, similar to how we have a poll going on right now, but it's not going to be going on much longer. This episode comes out on 3 a.m. on Friday, which means you have a little over 12 hours from when this episode releases at 5 p.m. Eastern time before that poll closes.
Yeah.
And that poll will dictate what our bonus episode will be this month. The four.
What are the options?
The four contenders are Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Tron Legacy, The Neverending Story, and Almost Famous.
And right now, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like Temple of Doom is in the lead, right?
As of this recording, Temple is in the lead. Neverending Story is shortly behind.
There were so many. I mean, I'm not sad. That's great. I'm like, whatever the people want, right? But there were so many people that made the effort to comment how excited they were about Almost Famous. Like, right. Oh, that's my favorite movie of all time. It's my wife's favorite movie of all time. But like, that's the only comment on the movies that we got, except for one Temple of Doom comment, I think. But then all the actual votes are Temple of Doom. So I was like, oh, they're going to be so sad.
They're just trolling us.
Yeah.
But hey, if you want to sway, because right now there's 52 votes as of this recording. That's a little, just barely over half of our patrons. So
yeah, it's anybody's game.
Yeah. So really, if you're listening to this from right now, panic, first of all.
Yes.
But in your panic, turn on your computer, go on to Patreon and vote on this poll.
That's right.
And if you're not a Patreon member, panic, go on to Patreon and become a subscriber so you can vote on the poll.
We got tons of extra content coming down the pipeline. We'd love for you guys to be a part of that. We understand it's tough times. It's tough for us as well. So if you can't financially support us, 100% understandable. You can rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening to this. A ton of you have done that. But also many more could, if you think about it. I mean, we've got like, I think we got 500 reviews or something just on Apple podcasts, and then another 600 or so on Spotify. But we have tens of thousands of listeners. So, hey, take that extra couple seconds and help us out and rate and review the show. That helps a ton for boosting us up in the feeds and keeping us in the conversation. But regardless, if nothing else, thank you for simply listening and joining the conversation with us. That's wonderful. We very much appreciate that.
Yeah.
And right, let's get into the meat and potatoes.
A little Andy voice there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get into the meat and potatoes of the show. Andy.
Yes, sir.
What's something you want to plug? What do you want to start with for your crossing streams?
Well, so for the first one, I feel like I'm going to bounce it back to you or at least do it with you, because for the first one, I want to talk about the Black Phone.
Ah, yes.
I don't think that we've talked about that. I know you and I talked personally, but like, have we talked about it on the show at all?
No, we haven't done anything other than Stranger Things content since you and I saw it.
The wonderful new film by Scott Derrickson of Doctor Strange fame.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Cargill wrote
Insidious?
It with them.
Did he do Insidious?
Yes, I think so.
He did a really good indie horror film. I know that.
I know that. He did not do Insidious, because I'm almost certain that was James Wan.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That would have come out Sinister. Yeah, I was going to say.
And The Exorcism of Emily Rose.
Yes.
So anyway, he's a great horror director. Him and C. Robert Cargill wrote Doctor Strange. So that was super exciting. Mm-hmm. The duo's back again. You guys might know him by Massaworm. He was a movie reviewer in the early aughts, I think. So he's like one of us that started writing screenplays.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. So what'd you think of The Black Phone, Andy?
Dude, I thought it was so good. It felt like there have been a whole lot of period pieces coming out in the last, I don't know, decade
period?
Or so. Well, in the last period. Yes, give or take. Mm-hmm. This, maybe more than any other, really, truly, honestly felt like it was pulled from that time period. They had this wonderful type of cinematography where, like, not only did
it takes place in the 70s. Mm-hmm.
You need to do that for this type of story and to try to establish like the lack of communication and like the general dread. And you find out news from your friends and family and not from Twitter, you know? Mm-hmm. But the way that it was produced, the cinematography, not just like with the film grain and stuff, but also like the way that they cut to like this Super 8 film occasionally when they're doing flashbacks and telling the stories of like the people that have been abducted and stuff. It was just beautifully done, and it felt so much like it was actually truly a product of the time that it is trying to establish, and I thought that was wonderful. So the film itself, I feel like was a little bit mismarketed as a horror film. There are some spoopy moments to it, but overall it felt like more of a like mystery thriller.
It's very like David Finchery, I would say, than anything Scott Derrickson's done before.
Very much so. It felt like a Zodiac thing. Like, it had moments of dread, but overall it was not a horror film.
It was like Zodiac meets 2017's It.
Yes, I'd put it there.
If that sounds awesome, then you're going to love it. And it did very well. It's got over $100 million in the global box office, which for a smaller horror film, that's great.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. And I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
I thought that it was really interesting. And Chris, you read some stuff online that better justified it. But I thought it was so interesting and maybe a little disappointing, at least at my time of viewing it, that there was not a ton of backstory for the killer. The I was going to say titular, but it's not titular. But
the guy they call the black phone.
The black phone himself.
You're just down in a hidden alley and you just hear a guy going, ring, ring.
Ring, ring, ring. Here I come.
I'm going to get you. I'm going to drop this call. Operator.
But yeah, Ethan Hawke was absolutely fucking incredible in this. And like, he got all beefy. And it blew my mind that for a film where you get fucking Ethan Hawke to play the killer, they covered up his face. It was like Christopher Nolan using Tom Hardy. They're like, let's take one of the most handsome men on the planet and put a mask on that mm-hmm. face.
Yeah, they don't show his face, but for a split second, pretty much, I think. But really interesting performance from him, mm-hmm. like the most interesting I've seen of his since maybe Gattaca.
I thought it was beautifully done.
Yeah, I love this movie. It's going to be one of my top 10 of the year. It is as of right now, but I think it has a good chance of staying there. I thought it was very thrilling. I saw it by myself in the middle of the day, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time. It was supposed to release in February, I think, and got pushed back to June. I was very sad at the time. So really excited that I got to see it. If you guys, I think it's still in theaters, but it'll be out on VOD soon. But yeah, huge fan of the Black Phone. And
but so what did you think of the concept of the dearth of backstory for a villain?
I hadn't thought about it until like you mentioned it. Like I wasn't thinking of like, how did he get the way that he is or anything? Like it was just a little bit of clues. Like there is no exploration of how he became the killer or was he abused as a child or anything like, or what paranormal dealings has he had in the past? Like you would normally have in a film like that. And I thought that was refreshing, but online people were saying, hey, I love how victim focused it is. Like this movie doesn't give a fuck who the killer is or what his motivation is. It's all centered around the victims. And that's very respectful and refreshing. And I was like, that probably was the intention. You know, that's awesome.
And so that was one of the things that I thought was excellent, especially as far as the cinematography is concerned, is that like when we delve a little bit into the backstory of the individuals that were grabbed by Ethan Hawke prior to our protagonist, we get this like Super 8 like family film backstory of them in the lead up to their grabbing. And I thought that that was incredibly cool.
Yeah, I think the intention of that was to mimic Texas Chainsaw Massacre, mm-hmm. which they even mentioned that film in the film.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, it's a lot like X is probably what you were saying, like how it's like this, you know, late 70s horror homage, right? And we get a lot of that in general recently, but this year we've had two big tentpole mm-hmm. movies that do that.
I do want to give a special shout out to the child acting in that film. Now, there are a few outliers, but for the most part, it was absolutely stellar. There's a girl. Her name is Madeline McGraw. She plays Gwen. She's the younger sister of our protagonist, Finny.
She was great.
She was phenomenal. She was so good.
Stranger Things good, Steve.
She has this sequence where she's dealing with an abusive father, and she is just screaming back at him bloody murder while she's being abused. And I got like, I'm getting chills thinking about it. I got chills then. This girl is going to be a star. Like she is absolutely fucking,
she's gonna be a star, see?
She was so good. Like just that one scene, that is going to be like her demo reel for all time. It was incredible. But yeah, the Black Phone, I thought it was really, really, really good. It got super duper hyped on the internets for a little bit when it first launched, and it deserved all the hype, man. It was great.
Yeah, had a good time as well. Also recommend that. Have you been on, has it been on your radar at all, Steve?
Honestly, it wasn't because I'm not a horror fan.
Do you Black Phone?
But the fact that you guys sold it as Zodiac meets It, 2017's It, it's like, oh, yeah. Those are movies I'm into.
Yeah. It was sold as a horror film, like in the trailers and stuff. And most of the scary stuff is in the trailers. There's like one really solid jump scare that I was like, oh, shit. But other than that, I was like, this isn't a horror movie.
Word.
So, yeah, you would probably love it.
All right. I'll have to check it out.
What about you, Steve? What have you been doing?
Well, I have a couple movies, but the first thing I'm going to talk about is it's stupid. so as you guys know, we've been super busy with the show, the podcast. And sometimes I'll leave from here after we get done recording, and I'll edit the show, and it'll take me a couple hours to edit the show. And you know, I go straight to bed, and I don't have time to watch a movie, and I don't really have the headspace to really kind of ingest a show that I have to pay attention to. So I put on something I don't have to pay attention to, but might, you know, be kind of interesting to listen to in the background.
Transformers.
Titanic.
No. This is a show. It originally came out in 2019 on the History Channel. Can now stream it on Netflix, which is where I saw it. I thought it was a brand new thing when it came out on Netflix, because Netflix was like, for you? I assume because I just watched Stranger Things, it was like, you like Strange Things? How about this show? This show is produced and hosted by one William Shatner. I hardly know her. It is described, this show claims to, quote, explore subjects that have mystified mankind for centuries. It is a show called Unexplained, spelled U-N-X-plained.
Nice.
So it's missing an E.
So it's like a porn thing?
No, I wish. No,
it's so, unexplained.
This is the type of show where it's like, oh, are there aliens? What is Bigfoot? Who built? It's that type of thing, right? It's like prime for conspiracy and mystery and cryptozoology and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But it's bookended and narrated by William Shatner. So at the beginning of each episode, William Shatner, again,
stop saying his name.
Say the name.
Oh, I'm never going to stop saying William Shatner's name. Bill Shatner,
you're doing three syllables.
Comes hobbling out from behind a giant TV monitor going, the pyramids, who built them? Was it aliens? Was it man? Is it unexplained?
And this you want to sleep with common people?
Exactly. And so I started watching because I'm like, oh, okay. This at least has to be mildly entertaining because it's him. And it's pretty fucking bad because it's like, okay, you have a...
No way.
Well, even in terms of that type of show, because, okay, you got, what, 45 minutes because it's an hour-long episode, but with commercials, it's 45 minutes. You got this 45 minutes to explain mysterious structures. So you'd think, like, oh, they'll spend 20 minutes on each one, and that'll give you like kind of like a three-parter episode, right? No, they're like, all right, we got 5 minutes to talk about this one, and then 7 minutes to talk about that one. So there's barreling through subjects.
I'm and getting stressed out.
You're not learning anything about any of them, even like mildly.
The Sphinxes. Pretty cool.
There was one episode that they talked about this place called the Loreto Chapel. It's a small church in Mexico that has a really interesting story about how it has this very mysterious staircase. It's a spiral staircase built in, I think they said, like the early 1800s. And it's like, how did they build that back then? This is almost impossible to build now. And the story is like, oh, the ghost of St. John came and built it, and the nuns prayed for 9 days.
Do the voice.
The ghost of
St. John. I was doing the nun voice. Oh. The ghost of St. John. How many days did it take him? Was it 9? Probably. That's what they said. But you don't really get to learn anything about it. And then the other thing is the guests that they interview, like the talking heads that they get on, are just total fucking hacks.
Tinfoil hat boys.
I love the talking heads.
And you can see them a mile away. Like there was this one where William Shatner's like, what does he say? He says, demons? They exist. They're among us. We take you now to the most haunted place in America. And in my mind, I'm thinking of like all the crazy haunted places in America, like Bobby Mackey's, the Winchester Hotel or mansion. That one hotel where the guy killed a bunch of people and they made an American Horror Story season out of it. All these places, right? No, it's just like a one bedroom house in the middle of fucking nowhere mm-hmm. that just happens to be shaped like a cross. And they're like, it's shaped like an upside down cross. I'm like, how do you know it's upside down? From aerial, I can just rotate and it's a normal size.
Yeah, turn the other way.
Exactly. And it's this woman who's like, I won't go in there. When I was in there, it scratched my back and it yelled at my son and it did all this stuff. And the talking head that's talking about it is like, yeah, I interviewed her. And it's definitely the most haunted place I have ever encountered. And I've never heard of this place, all right? So, of course, I immediately go on Google and I'm like, I have to know what this place is about. That talking head owns that fucking house. He's legitimately the owner of the house. And there's just YouTube videos of him like standing in the living room like, yeah, someone died right there in that couch. See the blood spatter on the couch? That's real blood. And then like the duvetine that they have up to block the sunlight coming in from the window so they can get the shot falls over. Like, oh, a ghost! The duvetine fell! Like, well, yeah, because you didn't have it hooked up properly, numbnuts.
Like, you're a bad landlord.
You are such a tin pot crook. But so, yeah, it's a terrible show, but it's kind of amusing if you got something on the background that you don't want to focus on, because every now and then William Shatner will hobble out from behind a screen and say, demons? This one episode ends, and the listener's not going to appreciate this, but this is only for you guys. So listeners, go, I think it's episode 2. It's how it closes out, where he's like, these structures, will we ever find an answer to who built the pyramids, to who built the stairs from Laredo?
Steve's gesticulating a shrug.
He does this over-exaggerated, like, It looks like he forgot. It looks like he forgot his line, and then just kind of did a shrug. Like did this weird, and then it fades to black. That's the end of the episode. Like, did they? I don't know. It's the funniest goddamn thing. But that's number one, Chris. What about you?
And what was that called again? You can find it on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. It's called The Unexplained.
The Unexplained. Okay. I've got two movies that are related tangentially. So I just realized this. I'm really excited. But I'll talk about the next one when it gets back around to me. Both of which I know Andy will love.
Yes.
Steve, I'm not so sure. But the first one is called Watcher. I hardly know her. And it stars Micah Monroe, who was the star of It Follows, which is a movie that Andy and I love. And it's directed by Chloe Acuno. And I'm really excited to talk about this movie because it was very, very good. And it's a smaller kind of indie. I wouldn't describe it as horror either. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's very unsettling. It's very slow burn. So it's about a young woman who moves to Romania with her boyfriend, maybe husband. I think husband, doesn't matter. She's younger. Could go either way, right? It's like 20 somethings. And she moves to Romania because he's like a lawyer and he's from Romania originally. And
Romania law.
It's a new
coming
show.
Coming to you on UPN. Da-dun.
And so these are their stories. And she had to kind of wander Romania without her husband because he's at work. She doesn't have a job there yet. She was an actress in LA. And I love the way they do this because everybody speaks Romanian. Obviously, she doesn't, and they don't give you subtitles. So it's
we've done that so many times where we're like, what an interesting choice. They don't give you subtitles. And then it turns out that like we have the settings wrong. Are you sure this wasn't one of those?
99% because she doesn't know what they're saying. So why do we get to know? Do you know what I mean? And I think it's intentional because it's very unsettling. If you think about being, and a lot of our listeners are from all around the world. They probably experience this on a daily basis and they're like, yeah, it kind of sucks, but you get over it. But for me, I've never left America, right? So it's like America. It seems like to me that would be unsettling and scary if I was alone, especially if I was a young woman, right? And this kind of, and it's at night and everybody's talking at me and I don't know what they're saying. I'm trying to like talk slower in a language they don't speak. I don't know why everybody does that. No, I would like to leave here. Like they don't speak English. Doesn't matter how slow you talk. it's just like a weird thing everybody does.
Yeah.
But I love that element to it. And, but she realizes somebody's watching her in the apartment across the street. And at the very first half of the movie, I was like, okay, this whole plot could be solved by just getting curtains. And it was bothering me, but eventually she does get curtains. And I was like, oh, thank God. Cause she's got these giant bay windows and no curtains. And she's like, I think he's watching me. But yeah, it's a really slow burn. Awesome thing. She starts to feel kind of gaslit and crazy because her husband's like, he's probably not fucking watching you. You're just bored. And he definitely is, you know, like she can stare at him and it's just really creepy and unsettling.
Like a sign saying I'm watching you.
Yeah. And what's really funny is if you've seen It Follows, I mean, that's a movie about Micah Monroe being followed. And so is this. So it's like she's got her own being followed extended universe going on, but she does it so well. And I love this movie. Ultimately, it ends in a place that's, I think, satisfying. It's a really creative, unique, slow burn. I don't see too many movies taking place in Romania. So that was neat as well. And I just, all in all, I think it deserves a lot more attention and love. I think I rented it for $3 on Apple TV. I'm sure it'll be streaming on Shudder or something like that very soon. Maybe Hulu. It looks like a Hulu movie. But yeah, so that's called Watcher. And I recommend you watch Watcher. Andy, do you got anything else that you want to plug or talk about?
I do. So in the lead up to watching The Black Phone, I was in a spoopy movie mood. And I'm ashamed because spoopy. We were just talking about it and we were debating whether or not who had directed it. But I also watched for the first time Insidious. And so Insidious and Sinister came out around the same time and they both had Patrick Wilson. Or no, I'm sorry. Sinister had Ethan Hawke. So I'm just all mixed up on Patrick Wilson, Ethan Hawke.
We James got a Wong. String of horror films that were all really good.
That had a lot of the same actors. Mm-hmm. But so anyway, I watched Insidious. That was definitely directed by James Wan. It was written by Lee Wannell, the guy that wrote and starred in the original Saw. I think he went on to also write the next, like, second and third Saw, and then was a producer on a bunch of them. But he was the one that was not the Princess Bride guy in the original Saw.
Yeah.
Of the two, he was not in the Princess Bride.
The brunette.
Yes.
He wasn't the mayor from Stranger
What's
Things.
What's the male version of brunette? Is it like Brunner?
Brunner.
He's the burner. I don't know. Just wondering linguistically.
I never thought of that.
Yeah. Just linguistically, I'm just wondering.
Wow. It's like, I wonder, is there
barista and barrister, you know?
Yeah.
Like something like that. That's a thing.
Yeah.
Barista and barrister.
Is it Bruno? Barrister. And we don't talk about Bruno, so I should shut up.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's
it. But go on.
But so Insidious, it was really, really interesting. I thought that, like, it was better conceptually than it was in action. It is about, like, potential, like, cosmic demons that you can run into in astral projection being, like, you know, a form of meditation where you leave your body and explore, like, the other dimensions and how one could potentially become haunted through that process. It stars Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne, it was really good in a lot of ways, but it was also mostly, to me, a big precursor to Malignant, which was a massively underwhelming film for me, because it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
I liked how silly it was.
I wasn't expecting the silly. So this is like half silly, half scary. And so the scary moments I loved, the silly moments I was like, oh no, I can see where you're going, James Wan. I can see where you're headed and I don't like where you're headed. Please don't do it. But I'm talking to him 12 years ago, so obviously he's not going to hear me. But I will say that Patrick Wilson was kind of born to play like the father figure in horror films. I really do.
Yeah,
like,
he's great at that.
All of my favorite roles of his are him as that.
He also plays a great, what's the superhero in Watchmen? Mr. Owl?
Night Owl.
Oh, wait, that's the guy. Owl. That's the guy trying to find the Tootsie Pop. Yeah. How many licks?
One, two, three.
Mr. Owl. Did you know Patrick Wilson played that guy?
Yes.
Little known fact.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me because Patrick Wilson has made a career out of playing people in very famous movies, but no one remembers he's in him.
Wide-eyed people who count. Yep, that's pretty much what I'm looking for. But yeah, no, I thought Insidious was fun. It was...
Is that the one with the Darth Maul demon?
It is.
Okay, yeah.
And that is a really cool shot. That's the one image that you see if you Google Insidious.
I consciously knew that you're not a big fan of horror movies, Steve.
Really? I feel like I talk about it fairly often.
We've definitely mentioned it at some point, but maybe it's because I'm such a big fan that I kind of counterbalance you and it just averages out.
Yeah. I mean, I'll watch a horror film if people like are like, hey, you should see this, or hey, we're going to watch this. Come with us. I'll do it. But like, I never want to go seek them out on my own. Sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. You're not a seeker of the horror.
Because most horror films fall into two camps. Either they're schlocky horror that I just don't really care for unless I'm watching it with a bunch of people and we're just making fun of it. Or it's super duper artsy art house horror like The Witch that I can respect the hell out of, but I'm not going to really have fun watching it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You didn't have fun with The Witch?
I don't like The Witch.
Oh, what?
Let's not get into it because I don't want to get angry at Steve.
Do we know that?
No, yeah, because I've talked about how objectively I can watch The Witch and say that is a well-made movie. I think it's a good movie, not for me.
Sure. Okay. That's respectable.
Yeah.
That's respectable.
All right, Steven. Well, first off, fuck you. But yeah, no, that's Insidious. And I would encourage people to watch it.
Awesome. Where did you watch that? Is it streamable anywhere? Do you know?
It is definitely streamable, and I'm definitely not going to search it right now on this app called
Just Watch. He's not stalling.
It is extremely handy in case anybody didn't know. Just Google it. Just kidding. It's on Netflix and Hulu.
Wow, the biggest ones.
Whoa, you got two options, guys.
Two options. Steve, what else have you been streaming?
So my next one was a movie that... I don't know why I sought this out. I don't know why I watched it. Actually, I do know why. I was sitting in my house. I was, you know, listeners.
Lonely.
Lonely listeners may know I'm recently divorced. So I was literally at my house lonely. And Apple TV, I guess, was like, hey, this.
Hey, sad boy.
This sad sack of shit. You know what he wants to watch? A romantic comedy. You know what romantic comedy is new on Amazon Prime?
Oh, yes.
Marry Me, starring Jennifer Lopez.
I was hoping you said you watched The Lost City, but no. I want to see Marry Me. I like J-Lo a lot.
Yeah, and to be honest, this is, again, similar to horror films, this isn't the type of movie that I actively seek out, but something about the mood I was in and the moment that Apple TV was like, this... I was on the tele, yeah. Okay.
The algorithm works.
It does. So I watched Marry Me. It's on Amazon Prime. Like Chris said, it stars Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson.
Wow. J-Lo.
And I surprisingly, I was happy to see that Sarah Silverman is also in this. She's hilarious in it. And John Bradley from Game of Thrones is in this as Jennifer Lopez's manager.
Nice.
John Bradley.
He was just in Moonfall. He plays
Jon Snow's buddy.
Sam.
Charlie. Sam.
Charlie, yeah.
Okay. This motherfucker pulled out a Moonfall.
That's what he was in recently. Come on.
He's in Moonfall to the three people who haven't seen Moonfall.
To the three people that have.
Got him. But yeah, it's directed by Kat. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Kat Coiro. But yeah. She
nailed it.
Is that how you pronounce it?
We have no idea.
We're just supportive of you.
We slugged each other. Went, yeah.
She's directed, you know, the show Dead to Me? On Netflix?
With Christine Applegate?
Yeah.
I know it. I didn't watch it.
Oh, that's a good show. At least the first season was. But she's the director of that. She's also going to be the director of the upcoming Marvel She-Hulk when that comes out.
Yeah.
And then writers John Rogers, Tammy Sager, and Harper Dill.
Harper Dill.
John Rogers
what
is
a cool name.
I know.
John Rogers is an interesting writer because he's written a lot of stuff like Catwoman, the Halle Berry one.
Nice.
The Core. Do you remember The Core?
No.
Yes. With fucking Aaron
Eckhart.
Yeah. Dude, you don't remember that movie?
No.
Where they have to go down to the core and jumpstart it with a nuke? The core of the earth?
That's like when, if it's not a Roland Emmerich film, it's like when everyone was trying to make Roland Emmerich films. Like this came out around like Armageddon and like Independence.
All the birds fall out of the sky, Dante's Peak. And people with pacemakers die at the same time because the magnetic fields are all fucked up at the beginning.
Poor bastards.
Did we watch that in high school so many times?
I was really high.
But Marry Me, surprisingly, I had fun with it. It was Owen Wilson and Jennifer Lopez do have surprisingly good chemistry. I liked the idea that, I guess, part of the reason why I guess I liked it is, and it because usually rom-coms will depress me further if I'm in that mood, right? Because it's like, they're happy. Why am I not happy? Why am I still lonely? But this one, because it's centered on Jennifer Lopez, who is this pop star who is world famous, and she's like the most famous pop star in the world. So her life is not relatable to me at all, but it's still fun to watch. And then you get Owen Wilson's like, I just want to take my daughter to school and not be hounded by the press. Wow.
Can you do Owen Wilson asking if she's from the block?
Pardon me, are you from the block?
Are you still?
Will you say there's always time for J-Lo?
There's always time for J-Lo.
That's a little Jell-O reference.
But it was a fun watch. And like I said, they had good chemistry. The one weird thing about this movie that I noticed for all you film geeks out there, they could have, instead of calling this movie Marry Me, they could have just called it Fish-Eyed Lens, the movie. Because almost every shot is filmed with an ultra-wide lens, even if they don't have to. I was really, because if you don't know, listener, if you're not aware, a wide-angle lens will, it allows you to shoot in tight spaces. So you can get like the full spectrum of the tight room that you're in. But a downside to that, usually when you film with a wide angle lens, your subjects are in the center of frame, because if they're on the edge of frames, there is a slight distortion where things will start to curve when you get to the outer edges of the frame. But this movie is like people are walking into frame and out of frame and the camera's sweeping past people, but they've got a wide angle lens on. So you just see the distortion happen.
It's like shot with the GoPro.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's really odd that there's like tight close-ups of people and it's in a wide angle lens. Like, did they just have a lens for this whole movie? And they're just like, well, fuck it. We can't buy a different lens.
We only got J-Lo for 6 days.
Oh, the budget went to J-Lo.
Yeah.
And John Bradley.
Because he was from fucking Moonfall. And we're like, we got to have him.
Yeah, there was like a window of a month where John Bradley's like, oh, I'm really famous now. I'm in Moonfall. It's going to be the biggest movie ever.
It hadn't come out yet.
Oh, no, it wasn't. Dear me. But yeah, that's Marry Me. You can stream it on Amazon Prime. Chris, what do you have up next?
So this next movie... I didn't do this on purpose. It's called Under the Silver Lake.
Oh, you watched it?
And again, yeah, I did watch it. I did rent it, so it's not streamable anywhere that I'm aware of.
It's on Canopy.
What the fuck is Canopy?
Canopy, the with one the K? That I name drop with the K. You connect it with your library card. Oh,
he's doing the whoop whoop hands.
Andy's like that guy. Like, if you ever need to find just a random ass streaming service, ask Andy. Say, oh, you heard of Canopy?
Because you know why?
It's similar to Coconut.
All the expensive ones he uses is mine. And then he's just like, you can have my library card account in return, Chris.
For what it's worth, recently, listeners, Chris asked for my Shudder password. Shudder found out I was getting it for free.
Chris was
like, hey, let me get that password. I was like, well, he's already given me a couple services. So I resubscribed and gave you the password.
Oh, wow. I didn't know you did that for me. Sure, is that what happened last night? You actually weren't subscribed?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's why you delayed 2 days. Like, you were like, shit, I don't have Shudder. He's going to be so mad.
What am I going to tell him? He's going to make fun of me.
I didn't like the movie I watched. I don't think it very much at all. But we'll talk about that later. But thank you. There's a lot of good stuff on Shudder for sure.
You're not talking about...
No, so Under the Silver Lake,
Canopy.
Under the Silver Lake, I loved. Right. Yeah. And this movie is not for everybody. I'm going to say that up front. It is weird. It's written and directed by David Robert Mitchell.
Who did?
It Follows. Yes. So that was like the accidental double connection. So I have a Micah Monroe movie and a David Robert Mitchell movie. So
Six Degrees of David Robert
Mitchell. Yeah. This came out in 2018. It's an A24 film. Andy apparently knows a lot about it. Have you heard of it, Steve?
I've heard of it. I don't really know much other than that.
I don't think you'll like it, but you might. It stars Andrew Garfield as the main protagonist. It's also, I don't know how to say her name ever. I always fuck it up. Riley Cuff? Or is it Keo?
Keo, I think. I think it's Keo.
Because it looks like it might be Irish and you just say Cuff or something, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go with Keo. It also has cameos from Topher Grace, Sydney Sweeney, and Summer Mitchell, who's one of my favorite characters from The Magicians. And that's just for me and seven other people to know and care about. I saw her like, hey, it's King Margo. Anyway, but yeah, so it's about Andrew Garfield is this loser in L.A., doesn't work or anything. The film opens.
Hey, he was in Spider-Man. He's not a loser.
they riff on that, actually. It's really funny. But he's just like hanging out in L.A. He's a couple months late on his rent. Doesn't even work. Doesn't have a job.
Is this Tick, Tick, Boom?
So this movie, I'll get there in a second, kind of a little bit closer reference. And he's wandering around. He has a girl that he has sex with, but they're not in like a committed relationship. He runs into Riley Keough and they hang out for a night, smoke some weed, watch a movie. And he like kind of falls in love with her. And then she moves out in the middle of the night. When he comes over the next day, her apartment's empty and there's like a weird symbol on the wall. And so it becomes this like noir detective story where he's trying to find out what happened to her. And he goes through these labyrinthine, ridiculous, sometimes supernatural clues and codes to try to find, you know, Riley Keough. Like, where's Riley Keough? it's bizarre and weird and awesome. And I loved it. And so what the whole movie is ultimately about is it's La La Land for sad people. Because it's about all these people that... come to LA to live their dreams and have to compromise. And it's not like that at all. He's one of them, but he runs into like other characters who are actually getting work. They're like, he ends up calling an escort service for prostitutes. And it's the whole shtick for that escort service is their actual movie stars. Like, you ever want to, you ever wanted to fuck an Academy Award winning actress? Then call this number.
Meryl Streep's on her way.
So the whole joke is like, even when you make it, it's still a struggle and you have to grind and it's miserable out here. And it's like, that's why I said it's La La Land for sad people. It also reminds me a lot of like Mulholland Drive or like David Lynch's West Coast aesthetic and like the random weirdness of things that are never explained. Like, you may or may not have like a naked woman wearing an owl mask saunter in and slit somebody's throat and then leave, never to be explained. You may or may not have that. And but I say that with a caveat, because I actually, hot take, don't like David Lynch movies. But I loved this movie. So don't like let the Lynchianness, if you are a Lynch fan, let it pull you in. If you're not, don't let it dissuade you. I know that's not fair, but that's where I'm at with this.
There's a very small segment of our audience where their movie tastes hinge on the David Lynchiness.
Yes. So I wanted to throw
on the
that.
David Lynch scale. What give me that. How many David Lynches does this movie have?
This is 9 Lynches. I don't like that. I don't like that. This is 9 David Lynches.
You have to say David, yes. You have to put David in there.
Geez, we are done. I love this movie. And I think, you know, it's about all this listlessness and ennui. But I think I was at a very strange time in my life yesterday. That's when I watched it, where, because I had just watched Vertigo, an Alfred Hitchcock film I had never seen, which, hot take, I did not like. I thought it was ridiculous and that everybody's like shooting me with arrows for that. But because I just watched it, I got all of the Hitchcock references, because this is like an homage to old Hollywood as much as it is La La Land for sad people. And also, I was in a really bad mental headspace. I was very depressed yesterday. And so I'm like, yes, watching this movie, I can't describe it, but I was on its level. Like, the way that Steve was just right in the right space he needed to be to watch Marry Me. I accidentally stumbled on this sad guy in his 30s who doesn't see the point in life and was like, same, and had a great time watching this movie. So anyway, I hope I sold it well. I loved it, but I'm a huge fan of It Follows as well. That's Under the Silver Lake. I know Andy will adore it. Steve, I'm not so sure. But I think you might appreciate it because it's got some Paul Thomas Anderson-ness to it as well. Like, more Magnolia than Boogie Nights for sure, but it is kind of
I love Magnolia.
It's a great, you know, film. How Magnolia is random and unexplained in mm-hmm. certain ways, but is a normal movie in other respects.
And frogs.
Yes.
That was so great.
That is the way Under the Silver Lake is. It's just cool. It's really like, okay, we're going there and then we don't go there anymore. It also reminds me of Terry Gilliam movies.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was kind of out there in that. I know I'm pulling a lot of legendary directors out right now, but I really think that the movie's that good. I think it's underrated. I think it'll be a cult classic in like 20 years. People will be like, you guys didn't watch Under the Silver Lake? What losers. So don't be that person.
What
watch
a fool
it.
You are.
Yeah.
It's on Canopy.
It's on Canopy.
Hook it up with your library card and it's free.
That's right. Andy's got the plug. Could have saved me $4 if I'd listened to Andy.
Yeah. Same.
What else have you been streaming, Andy?
Well, I just want to say real quick, because you brought it up, Magnolia, there was recently a BuzzFeed article that came out where they talked about movies that people have walked out of. And there were very, like, a lot of them made sense. A lot of people walked out of Talladega Nights. So did I. Just kidding. I'm the only person, I think, ever in the history of man that walked out of that movie, but I was just burnt. But there was more than one person.
There's a
that
story there
that they that walked out.
You're just blowing past.
I feel like I've talked about it on the show, but there was more than one person that said they walked out of Magnolia, and I cannot believe that.
I mean,
Magnolia is amazing because it's just one of those movies where the tension just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And I don't see any point in that movie like, well, I'm bored.
Yeah.
It's one of only 2 times I can think of that Tom Cruise allowed himself to play an asshole.
Yeah, that's probably his best role.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Bobby Mackey? Is that his name? Something Mackey.
I forget his name, but I just remember the energy of it.
Yeah. I mean, his opening, his first line is respect the cock. So. Yeah, right.
Which I took to heart.
So last one, Chris, this is also going to be a combo for you and me. I finished The Boys. Did you finish
it
yet?
Did you watch it? Yeah.
I did.
I love the finale. I actually read recently it's getting some flack.
Okay.
But what did you think of it?
I thought it was great. I thought that the character motivations were extremely muddied in the climax, and that was pretty disappointing. Because they had built up a whole lot of relationships and dynamics and conflicts between all of these characters. And then all of the potential fell victim to circumstance. And it's hard to talk about it without right. getting into spoilers. But it just, the climax played out because of who happened to be there at a given time, as opposed to all of the dynamics that were established in the lead up to it. And that was disappointing to me. I will say that ultimately the season paid off better than I expected it to. I was not sold on it in the first couple of episodes. It felt like more of the same, but ultimately I feel like the season took some characters in directions that I didn't expect them to. And so it paid off for me to get to see like Carl Urban's character be not just vulnerable, but be a little more established as a human being. That was wonderful. It was also great to see Huey. What's the actor's name? Something Quinn?
It's Quaid.
Quaid.
Ben Quaid. Or Jack Quaid.
Definitely not
Jack
Ben. Quaid. Jack.
It was great That's to see.
Dad. Randy Quaid's his dad, isn't it?
No, it's not Randy. It's the other Quaid brother.
It's one of the fucking Quaids, man.
Dennis Quaid.
Oh, not Randy. I didn't know that.
I was going to say, that's not Randy.
Straight up your ass.
Or whatever he says from Independence Day.
I don't think he would be able to get a job in Hollywood if Randy Quaid was in that.
That's Randy Quaid's boy. Get him the fuck out of here.
Shitter's full. But no, I thought that it was great to see Huey be taken to some different places other than being like the lovable fuck up. It was great to get to see some more of the emotional impact of what it's like to be in a relationship with a superhero and how that reflects on you and how you can internalize like the kind of perpetual state of victimhood that you are inevitably in as a result of being with somebody like that. And so I feel like the season does not sell itself to somebody that didn't like it to begin with, but for the people that do like it, it is it's firing on all cylinders.
If you're watching season three of a show you don't like, what the fuck are you doing?
Sure, but it's like anything that's turns out to be amazing. It's like, oh my God, if you stick around, like I always tell you and anybody who will listen, Always Sunny in Philadelphia does not start out great, but when it gets great, it stays great for a long time, and that's around season four.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is that I feel like this show has firm legs and it's still set to keep running. And that's great.
They don't skip leg day on The Boys.
Yeah. Especially a show like this, because so much of this show hinges on like crassness and just gore and humor.
The Butcher?
It's surprising that it can last as long as it has. It really is, because and now I get that like there's something to be said for just like mindless schlock entertainment, but I do think that's more than that, because there's like, you know, cultural satire like in droves here, and sometimes it's a little too on the nose, but ultimately I think that it's necessary and pretty wonderfully done.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I initially wasn't super hot on season three, the first couple episodes, just like you said, because, and then it hit me. Part of the reason the satire has to be like bludgeoning you in like a Paul Verhoeven way. Like if there's nothing subtle about it. Like this
I love Paul Verhoeven.
Me too. But this is like Starship Troopers level subtle, as in to say not at all.
But Starship Troopers is also one of the best satires of all time.
Fucking rocks. But I think it's entirely on purpose, because if you look online, there was an entire sect of people who this show was making fun of blatantly that didn't understand that. They were like, finally, I'm being represented in a positive way. Or I'm sorry to use that accent for those that are offended by that. But that's how I imagine they talk. And then they realize, the show realizes, oh, they don't get it. Let's just be as obvious as possible. Let's plant our flag here. And that kind of hit me. But I also think that this is the best season of The Boys, is what it ultimately turned out to, because the character arcs all came to a really good place, in my opinion, which I think is mostly what you were saying as well. I love the finale. And
there were a few character arcs that fell extremely flat for me, but Black Noir especially, the Deep to an extent.
Well, the man doesn't have a line of dialogue, right? So I think they did, the fact that they did anything with that, like he has, you don't see his face and he doesn't talk. So it's just a blank mask with no sound, and they still did some things.
Well, they did some backstory, and they also used some fun animation to give him some character, and that was great. But the payoff for it fell extremely flat for me. But no, overall, I think that, yes, I agree with you. Like, the main thrust of the character arcs that happened in season three were fucking phenomenal.
Yeah. And the source material, I've read all the comics. There is no real story. It is like straight Garth Ennis. Like, let me be shocking. It's a shock book, you know? So the fact that they've crafted what they have in the show version of it is really impressive. And I'm glad people are loving it so much, because The Boys is super, super popular. I mean, it's crushing it. One of the most popular shows on TV right now.
I know enough about The Boys comics. I haven't read them, but I know enough to know that they're way far removed from the,
yes,
especially after this season, from where it goes.
And I'm really, really proud of them. Yeah, that was fun. You should check it out, Steve. Watch season three, my boy.
I gotta get time.
I can't stop thinking about Joyce Byers saying that she wants to watch that. Do you guys want to
watch
The Boys? You guys want to watch The Boys? Steve, what else have you been watching?
I won't spend a lot of time on this one, but I watched a movie. I was almost threatened by this director. He was like, millennials suck. So I had to watch House of Gucci.
Nice.
Directed by Ridley Scott, who famously blamed the lack of The Last Duel ticket sales on millennials. Weird pull.
Yeah.
But yeah, House of Gucci, if you don't know, stars Lady Gaga, Adam Driver, Al Pacino, Jared Leto, Salma Hayek's in it, Jeremy Irons is in it. And I just said it's directed by Ridley Scott, written by Becky Johnson and Roberto...
Becky Johnson!
Bentivegna? I'm not going to pronounce that.
Bentivegna!
based on the book by Sarah Gay Forden, and it's obviously based on a real life, you know, the Gucci's back in the 80s.
Gucci, and 90s,
baby. The Gucci family. Mm-hmm. It's one of those movies where, like, I was entertained the whole time. I thought the actors are great and they're doing fun stuff. I don't know if it's like Academy level acting, because a lot of the acting kind of boils down to just Italian accents.
What'd you think of Jared Leto?
Wasn't this the movie where Lady Gaga was kept an Italian accent for like ever and was all about that online?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone's doing an Italian accent in this movie, and not all of them are great. Like, they're acting,
including hers.
They're acting really well. Like, they're emoting, and you know, they're powerhouse actors, right? But they're all kind of like, what are you doing to me? Why are you bringing this to me on my wedding day? This is a bad thing.
Did you just do a Godfather?
I said, on my sister's wedding, on my daughter's wedding. Sorry, it's not my sister.
Day of my daughter's wedding.
What did he say? You don't have the respect to call me the Godfather.
Yeah, just a bunch of stuff.
Jared Leto is probably
it's his movie.
What else does he say? Well,
he says, "Oh my God, I'm dying of a heart attack.
I got a lemon in my mouth. Nice." He was holding back on this Brando the whole time.
He's a young Brando. Jared Leto is probably the he's the most fun to watch, because I think his accent is probably the worst, and also he's hidden behind layers of makeup. Like, Google search Jared Leto House of Gucci, the makeup department is equal parts amazing and awful, because they make him just look like the worst looking, like this comically bad looking, but it looks convincing. And it's just him with like, he's bald on top with like the long hair on the sides and like a weird mustache.
Hogan. It's straight up Hulk Hogan.
But like gray. And he's this gross looking now. And he's walking around in like pastel colored track suits. Like, where's my money? No one wants to understand my ideas. Why won't anyone make my suits? I'm so sad.
I want an Oscar.
I want to watch. I've been wanting to watch this. I just haven't. Isn't it long?
Yeah, it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long.
Yeah.
You can watch it. You can stream it on Amazon Prime right now. I had a good time with it. I think I rated it 3 stars out of 5 on Letterboxd, which would probably be like 4 stars for you, Chris. I don't know.
I think we have the same rating system. You just hated Thor Love and Thunder, which, by the way, he gave a 0.5 star more to House of Gucci than Thor.
I did.
I'm the first to admit the stars in relation to each other mean nothing. Like, mm-hmm. I like 1 4-star movie so much more than another 4-star movie. And it's all fucking arbitrary.
Well, this movie, unlike Thor Love and Thunder, this movie didn't have me constantly going, well, if they did this, it would be so much. Well, why did they do that? That's not as good. This movie, I was just kind of like, oh, okay. I consumed that. The story's kind of interesting, but I don't know if they went about telling it in the most interesting way. But
whenever I see House of Gucci now, I think of that meme somebody made where they cut Lady Gaga having sex into the Nicole Kidman AMC ad. And now I just like whatever amount of seriousness I could bring to this is now gone. And I'm just completely seeing this as a comedy, which I don't think is Ridley Scott's intent.
No, it's definitely not a comedy.
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's not like the most drama ever. I mean, there's some levity to it, but
I do love Adam Driver, though.
Yeah, he's
step on me.
I mean, it's great cast. And I'm a huge
fuck of a mountain.
I love Ridley Scott. So like, really wanted to watch this, but didn't.
And you know what? He's just going to blame you.
He does blame me.
He blames you specifically. You goddamn.
I'm an elder millennial, I think. Right.
No, you're a younger.
I'm a mid. Am I mid? You're a mid. As the kids would say. I am actually quite mid.
You're a mid millennial. Yeah,
for sure. But yeah, I want to plug a couple of things real quick, just because one of them is really short. I played a game that was recommended by a listener. Hopefully they're still listening. It's called Unravel 2.
Oh, yeah.
Dope.
Really good. So my wife and I have this thing. Well, it's not really a thing because we've only done It Takes Two and that's it. But she really enjoys playing like co-op platformer games with me. And we had a blast playing It Takes Two. So we started playing Unravel 2, which was on sale. I think I bought it for like $5. It's not as good as It Takes Two. It's not as like in depth, but it's really cute. You play these two little yarn people and you're tied together. And so you have to. The mechanics of it are really interesting. So like you'll be up on a platform and then maybe you have to swing to another platform. So the way to swing is you're attached to the other person. So the other person stays up there and you let the other person swing off of you or vice versa. And little things like that. Or,
oh God, you swung them off.
Yeah. Oh my God. The yarn pulls you off. So that's Unravel 2. I don't know if Unravel 1 is any good. I didn't play that one. I don't think it's a narrative type game where that's important. I think you can jump straight to 2.
There's a lot of plot.
Am I going to be lost if I just skip straight to Unravel 2?
How does the yarn get made?
What's the blue one's deal?
Just like House of Gucci, the yarns talk in this absurd Italian accent. It's really weird. But hey. And Lady Gaga's in it.
Why won't you give me more of the yarn?
I'm trying to swing.
I want to swing, but no one is helping me swing.
It's just her and I. That's us arguing, actually.
Boop a da bop a da beak a da bo.
Exactly.
It's me. All
right. I went there.
But I also watched a show called The Bear. I believe it's on the Hulu.
Oh, I heard about this.
This show is phenomenal. It stars Jeremy Allen White from Shameless. And
he's the cool brother.
He is. He plays Lip. And and it's also got a cameo from John Bernthal, which somebody said was a spoiler, but it's in the marketing. It's like if you IMDb it, it says John Bernthal right there. So I disagree, but I love this show. This show was fucking great. It's kind of a uncut gemsy, stressful comedy shot in a small kitchen in Chicago where they make like I want to say Philly cheesesteaks, but it's Chicago, so it's Chicago cheesesteak type shit. Fucking really good show. And I spent a lot of my life in a kitchen. It's very hectic. It's very stressful. Everybody, there's a lot of competing personalities and shouting and cussing. And it's part of the fun because you're also a family type atmosphere. And that's what this show is. So it's like a, you know, handheld cameras following people around this kitchen. We're like, get the fuck out of my way. Hands. I got hands. Hands. Hurt. Corner. You know, just chaos. And it's really, really good. And it's about so Jeremy Allen White's character is his name's Carmi. And I think their family name is like Berzoli or something. So they call him the Bear because that's a play on his last name. He's a world renowned chef. Like, he is the chef of the best restaurant in the world. He went through all these like culinary schools and things like that. And his older brother commits suicide and leaves the Chicago restaurant to him. So he comes back to Chicago to run his family's shitty little restaurant, you know, but he's this world renowned chef. And so he tries to teach all of these, you know, jabronis how to work in a kitchen, you know, like, hey, you got to shout. We call each other chef. It's a sign of respect. You got to shout corner when you're coming around the corner, you know, all this stuff. And, but it's his journey of like self-actualization mixed with trying to fix up the chaos of this restaurant because he's like 300 grand in debt because of his brother. And one of his cousin is like selling coke out in the back alley. And it's just a bunch of shameless.
He's got a coke cousin?
Yeah. Coke cousin. But I loved it. Episode 7 is shot in one take completely.
Sweet.
It took him 3 tries, I think. And it's just, it's phenomenal. Like, once you see it, and like, it's really complex. I highly recommend it. I can't recommend enough. A lot of people have seen The Bear, but if you haven't yet, I'm looking at you two. It's 8 episodes, but they're all under 30 minutes each. One of the episodes is 20 minutes. So, I mean, it's in under 4 hours.
Where's it streaming?
Hulu.
Hulu?
Yeah, on the Hulus. So this is less than one Snyder cut. Right? Less than one Once Upon a Time in America. This is like 1.5 House of Gucci's to watch the entire season. And I highly recommend it. I was weeping like a baby at the finale. So I really recommend it. The Bear is awesome.
I do want to watch that.
Andy, have you been streaming anything else you want to plug?
So the last one that I want to plug is also on a free streaming service called Tubi. Or not to be.
To be.
And what is apparently turning out to be my life's quest to watch all Jake Gyllenhaal movies. Again, I just watched Life. Do you guys remember that film? The space movie with Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds, Rebecca Ferguson.
Yes.
And you watched Source Code recently, too.
I did. And Enemy. Yes. And, dude, I've been going hard.
Did you watch The Guilty?
I watched new Ambulance movie? Recently.
Ambulance.
No, I haven't seen The Guilty, but I'm just saying, I'm on my way. I also want to say real quick, the other day at work, somebody said, how's it going, man? I said, oh, you know, I'm just Jake Gyllenhaal. And I was pretty proud of that one.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yes.
Okay.
And I said it all smooth like that. Where it's like, but did he say? Yeah, that's what he said. Exactly like that. And so I played it off perfectly. A little pat on the back. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Life. It is a wonderful film that you can watch with ads on Tubi. It's about some people that are on the International Space Station that are expecting a satellite to return with a sample of what they hope is going to be alien life. That turns out to definitely be alien life. And it's about the shenanigans that ensue when the... alien life turns out to be malevolent, if you will. Mm. And it was really twisty and wonderful. I don't know that it's like, you know, a 5-star film on Steve's scale, but it's a film that
nothing rarely is.
It's
I think Steve would like it, though.
I do like it.
Oh, you've seen it?
I've seen it.
Well, I've seen it as well.
I saw it in theaters.
Yeah.
It's a film that like I feel like it more than a lot of films respects the intelligence of the audience, and it doesn't handhold you. And but it also treats stories in a way that without like a reverence for the way an act structure is expected to work. And somebody that you think is most definitely the main character definitely is not. And so it's twisty, and the ending is so fucking powerful and like morose in a way, but also beautiful. And
I do how they get to that ending is they do some very devious editing to get you to think it's going one way, but it's not.
Yes, the editing is extremely solid.
I remember watching that like, oh, that was some devious fucking edits right there. Well played.
But yeah, I mean, like, if you're just looking for, if you're like me and like, you know, the James Webb telescope images coming out was big news for you and you were watching the live stream when they were revealing that shit. If you're that type of person, then you're going to love this kind of shit. So go watch it.
One thing that I took away from that movie is it's like the exact opposite of Jaws, where in Jaws, the horror comes from never seeing the shark, right? And so many horror movies kind of follow to that rule, you know, effectively, I think. Whereas this movie's like, nope. monster's coming right at you. And just the way the alien looks and operates and the way it moves, it's honest to God, it terrifies me.
Yes,
like when that dude. Thing would like come at characters, I'm like, get it away, get it away, the get it away, get it away.
That is wonderful. It's a really good space horror movie.
Absolutely. Steve, yeah. What else have you been streaming?
Well, I streamed a thing that Chris has been trying to get all of us to stream for a while, and that is a...
Which one?
is it Tengulu? Is that how you pronounce it? A Tengulu film called RRR.
Oh, wonderful.
Directed by S.S. Rajmouli, who's a Pan-Indian filmmaker.
This literally almost unseated Everything Everywhere All at Once for my number one of the year.
Really?
Almost.
That high on your list?
Again, maybe a headspace thing. When I was watching this, I was weeping with joy. I don't weep with joy often, right? I weep a lot, but not with joy. Like there's less joy.
Yeah.
Than
more mirth. Were you mirthful?
No, I was in this instance, but it's just like the sheer love of cinema. This is Nicole Kidman, capital Nicole Kidman cinema.
I mean, do you think of anything you've ever liked in a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
This movie has it
for sure.
Literally, this movie has possibly the greatest action set piece of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It has the greatest dance sequence of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the greatest dance off of all time.
Literally, no movie in my lifetime has had this much of a dance.
It's like sequence. Step Up 1, 2, 3, and 4 combined.
Right.
Mixed with some Magic Mike.
Plus, it has like some incredible special effects. Like this movie was made for like what, 60, 70?
And some rough set special effects.
Well, I mean, it was made for like $60-70 million.
Yeah.
Compare that to Thor, Love and Thunder.
Right.
Which is almost $200 million budget. And this movie shits all over the visual effects.
Poo-poo's on it.
Thor, Love and Thunder.
Somebody said this director should have been tapped to direct the next Fast and Furious movie since Justin Lin stepped out.
100%.
And I was like, absolutely. Because it's over the top in that way, but actually way more.
I want to see Vin Diesel dancing.
Yeah, for sure. He would never work with Vin Diesel, probably.
But this movie really does kind of like encapsulate the ridiculousness of the Fast and Furious films while also adhering to the spirit of family and connectivity and the human experience. Like,
yes, it's so heartwarming, but also a guy throws a tiger at someone.
Right.
So
a guy literally lifts up a motorcycle and uses it as a sword and then throws it at someone else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. But yeah,
there's also kind of a Raccoonie-esque action set piece with both two people. Fuck, I loved it.
Dude, it's so good. And I mean, I did some research on this movie because when I watched it, I just had to learn more. Because I'm not super in, like, that's a part of the world I had
no experience with Indian cinema.
There's something, there's so many languages it's that not are spoken Bollywood, in India.
It's Tollywood. It's a totally different thing, just to throw that out there.
And I think Tengulu is that? I think that's the
I don't remember
language it's shot in.
Originally, but the only thing we can access on Netflix is the Hindi dub, which is unfortunate because I hate dubbed films.
Right.
But yeah, so it's dubbed in Hindi, which threw me way off. I had to research why I was experiencing that.
Yeah.
I would love to see the original version so much.
But yeah. So
because either way to us, it's subtitled. So it's like, shit, it's dubbed subbed.
Well, I did some research. Like I mentioned, it's directed by S.S. Rajmouli. It's written by, I'm going to fuck this up so bad.
Are you going to go for it?
Vijayendra Prasad, who is his 80-year-old father.
Really?
His 80-year-old father is a screenwriter for this.
God, awesome. I didn't know that.
S.S. Rajmouli has made 3 of the top 5 highest grossing films in India of all time.
Yeah, he's a legend. And the two actors, so just so you probably did this research. You did way more than me. Mm-hmm. Those two main actors are legends in India.
Yeah, Ram Charan and N.T. Rama Rao Jr.
Yeah, so there's this experience when if you're watching it over there where you're like, this is fucking Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt, right? And so you automatically have all this baggage when you see them. So we didn't get that. We were just like, oh, is he cool?
And plus, got like Steven Spielberg is the director.
Yes.
That's why the title RRR was initially a placeholder because it represents Rajmouli and then the two actors, Ram and Rama.
Oh, really?
It was the 3 of them. It was a placeholder. And then they were just like, well, let's just keep it. And they made the movie actually
Rise, Roar, Revolt or something.
Well, it's Rise, Roar, Revolt in America, but everywhere else, and in Hindi as well. But everywhere else, it like translates to Rage, War, and Blood is what it translates to.
That's way cooler.
It is. I don't know why we got the revolts and all that stuff.
Yeah. Because that's what we deserve.
But yeah, like just these... titans of that industry coming together. So like, if you are from that part of the world and you see these three people working together, you're like, fucking yeah,
right.
They can do this. What? And and just for us Western audience members, we will also kind of point out, well, what's your name? I wrote it down. Allison Duty is in this movie. You might recognize her. She plays Elsa in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, nice.
Okay. She's the evil wife who's like, whip him harder.
Yeah,
get there's it. Not enough blood on the ground.
Yeah.
And then Rafe Stevenson is the governor or whatever, the evil governor. He's one of
Thor's, he was great.
He's one of Thor's three buddies in the first two Thor movies. He's one of the Warriors Three. He's the one who looks like Gimli in those films. And like, you know, they're such cartoonishly they're cartoonishly evil, right?
Yeah.
Like, don't shoot that Indian person. Do you realize how much that bullet costs? It was made with British steel and it sailed on a British boat to get in your British gun. It's not worth that person's life. Isn't worth the price of this bullet. Kill him with a stick.
Like, yeah, I love that little shtick of his.
But like, I just felt compelled to do like research and like, are these, because it says like based on a true story. And when you see that and then you watch this movie, you're like, hold up.
Well, it's based on the colonialization of India.
Was based on a true story.
So the two characters, the two main characters are based off real guys. Alluri Sitarama Raju and Komaram Bhim. Those are real like big revolutionary figures in India's history that led revolts against the British Empire. But they never worked together.
They never met each other.
I think Raju died at the age 25 in like the 20s. And then Bhim died, I think, in around 1945. Like, so his revolution was in like the 40s and Raju's revolution was in like the 20s.
This big celebration of these historical events in a fantastical setting.
Yeah. Rajmouli even said like, if he were to describe the film, he would call it an imaginary friendship between two superheroes.
Yeah.
And really this movie is like, if you took Fast and the Furious and Inglourious Basterds in terms of how it treats history.
Sure.
And melded them together where yeah. like, it's not a factual retelling of these guys' story, but it really speaks to the human experience.
But with so much more heart and earnestness than yeah. those two things imply, it's fucking yes. incredible. It really is.
Yeah. It's so fucking good. Paul Scheer's podcast with Amy Nicholson on Unspooled do a really good deep dive on this. If you want to learn more about this movie, but it's so much fun. I mean, the scene where he goes and he jumps the fence and just, it's him with a stick versus 1,000 protesters. And he beats so much ass. All right. Dude, so much ass.
It's literally,
I'm so excited for the ass beating.
There's like a human cave is built and he's like poking his stick through holes to like hit people in the eyes.
It's like, and this is in the very first 10 minutes of the movie. And this, I was like, I'm fucking in,
right.
But it's like a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert, the mosh pit. Right. But like with 40,000 people, like bodies pressed against this fence. And then there's this Indian soldier guarding a British outpost. And there's only like 12 British soldiers in there.
About this when you watch it.
I remember.
The one dude beats everybody's ass.
So a guy throws a rock and breaks a window or something. And the arrogant British officers like, get that man and arrest him. And everybody's like, arrest him. What the fuck are you talking about? But our superhero protagonist is like, word, and jumps over the fence and beats all 10,000 of them to shit and grabs him and brings him back. And it's amazing.
I want to watch this. It's really long though, right?
It is. Yeah. It's an Indian film.
Worth so every bit of the three hours
and 30 minutes probably.
You could watch all of The Bear instead of this, but I recommend RRR.
Full disclosure, I did take a break. Like I watched it in two sittings just because I just didn't have time to.
I did too. I watched half of it on my laptop and then the rest. Once I realized it was so magnificent, I went downstairs to my surround sound and my TV. And
there is an intermission point, right?
There is.
Yeah. So if you get to the intermission point, you can
just say, okay, what I did.
I'll resume later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it is just
I really wish I had seen this in theaters.
One of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It's like incredible. Like the action set, like there's a set piece where like we
set penis,
set penis. There's a set piece where they throw, like you said, tigers at people and he fights a tiger at one point and it scratches his back and it growls at him and he just screams back at its face as he's like pushing it away.
It's the second R.
I love the scene where they first, kind of meet up and become best friends.
Yes.
One guy's on a bridge and the other guy is on the shore of the lake that the bridge is over. And there's a little kid in danger, right? And the both of them are trying to figure out how are they going to save this kid. Well, somehow they see each other, like bridge guy sees the other dude on the shore and he's like, you. And he just points at the kid, nods. And the guy's like, yeah. And somehow through that nod and glance, they communicate, all right, I'm going to get on a motorcycle and meet you up there. And you're going to get on a horse. And then we're going to do like this weird rope flippy thing where we're going to like grab a flag and that'll protect me from the water as I go through fire.
And
he gets
the flag in the water. And dude, it's
like, they don't talk about their plan. They just fucking do it because they're bros.
Their bromance is that strong.
It's like instantaneous.
It's like stepbrothers.
So anyway, I said, this almost... And it may still, on a rewatch, become my favorite movie of the year. It's that good. I loved it. It's just such a celebration of cinema.
Right.
So
exactly.
Awesome, Steve. I'm glad you finally watched it, buddy. That's awesome. Speaking of things that, well, I think Steve will appreciate this. The last thing that I need to talk about, I've got a few, but I'll just end with this. I watched all three of the prequels for Star Wars, episodes 1, 2, and 3. Because my son is now obsessed with Star Wars.
A Star Wars.
It finally happened. Yeah. And Andy and I grew up together watching these movies. And so he'd seen the original trilogy because I'm a good dad. And he's like, what do I watch now? And I was like, well, let's go watch Force Awakens. I think you'll enjoy that. And I was like, hold up. Let's just do this. Because he was like trying to ask questions about, you know, where Vader came from and all this stuff. And I was like, I got an idea. Let's watch the prequels. We'll do it in chronological order, which I think somebody on the internet said that it was sacrilegious that I was showing my son in chronological order. But
the way they came out.
But it has to be okay, because that's literally how the fuck they came out, right? But so then we watched.
I think that's the appropriate way
actually,
to watch it.
I accidentally macheted him because I...
Whoa. Yeah.
Like because he hasn't seen Return of the Jedi yet.
CPS. I'm yeah. Report so macheting.
He watched.
What? You skipped the best one.
I accidentally did it because I found out after we finished Revenge of the Sith. I was like, do you remember the Ewoks? And he was like, what's an Ewok? And I was like, hold up. I thought you watched episode 6. And he was like, I think I did. And I was like, you definitely didn't if you don't know what an Ewok is. So he watched A New Hope and Empire and then went and did the prequels, which is the machete thing. So I think that was neat because he found out, spoiler alert, that Vader was his father and then went back and did the Vader backstory thing. But all I came to say is that I really enjoyed these movies for what they were, especially watching them through the eyes of my 9-year-old son, which is how I watched them for the first time. I was about that age, 10, 11 or so. It was a really good time. Now, there were some absurd things. Phantom Menace has like the highest highs as far as there's Qui-Gon Jinn, which is amazing. Liam Neeson's great. But also the mostly Darth Maul and the saber battles are just crazy good in these movies.
Pod racing is also cool in episode 1.
Pod racing is fun. It's just unfortunately
pretty wizard.
Yeah, it's very wizard, but it is really fun. I don't want to knock the child actor, but he's not the best, right? But
this is a good trick.
But
I'll try spinning.
The saber battles are unparalleled in anything they've done since. Like, it's not that hard. It's all the people want. Just do cool lightsabery things. Lucas knew that. What's going on nowadays? Yeah. Like, it's so
do they
good.
Not have what's his name? Nick Gillard, I think, is the
stunt coordinator.
Coordinator for the prequels. Well, I don't know if they have
him
anymore.
He's a fucking mad genius because all of the spinning and stuff that people love to do nowadays is part of their cosplay. And like, there's people that are famous on TikTok just because of they can spin their lightsaber really well. All of that is done in these movies. That's where that started, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I was watching the fight in Revenge of the Sith between Anakin and Obi-Wan.
That's my favorite one.
It's so good. And it's so long.
Yeah.
I didn't remember this. They fight through like 6 settings, like all the way out into like the lava of Mustafar when they finally get out there. But Obi-Wan is doing these like back for no reason. He's spinning it behind his back and switching hands when that's not the quickest way to block at all. It just looks beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it. Yeah, so many good things. But what I came to say, my hot take, Attack of the Clones isn't that fucking bad. I don't know why everybody shits on it. Like, there's some really cool stuff in that movie. Like, it's just, it's got the Helm's Deep. You know what I mean? That's what it is. Like the
Geonosian battle arena.
Yeah, the Colosseum fight. Like, it's fine. It's no more corny than anything else that happens in the other movies, right? Am I wrong? I'm asking because I'm mean,
you're asking the person who says Attack of the Clones is his least favorite Star Wars film.
So. But I mean, like,
he might be biased.
It's most people's least
favorite. Yeah, that's a very common idea, and I just don't get it. I mean, I think it's because
my least favorite too, but that doesn't mean that it's like that much worse than any of the others. It's just the most inconsequential, probably.
Here's what my thought is. I don't know if this is true, that they're all just as bad. They're all pretty bad.
Sure.
But episode one has Darth Maul and Duel of the Fates. Episode three, they bring Duel of the Fates back, which I didn't remember, which is fire. And they have that awesome fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan and some really powerful acting from Ewan McGregor. And so there's a couple of highlights to lift those two up in people's estimation, whereas there isn't really that for Attack of the Clones. But there isn't anything especially egregious in Clones, I don't think. That's what I would say. What do you think about that?
Well, one at least has the establishing of a story going for it. And three, the payoff of that story, in as much as like, hey, one, this is the beginning of all of the stuff that you're going to see in the original trilogy. Here's the origins of Obi-Wan and his master and stuff like that. And then three, we get the payoff of Anakin ultimately becoming Darth Vader and all that shit. And then in two, we get like, here's Boba Fett's father and shit like that. And it's like, does that really matter? And so it's just ultimately an extremely inconsequential film in as far as the overarching Star Wars lore is concerned. And since none of them are that good of movies anyway, for it to not be that good and also not matter puts it pretty far down in the bottom of the barrel.
Sure.
But Andy, begun the Clone Wars have.
Begun the Clone Wars. Yoda, Frank Oz does some Yoda sentence structure with some more complex sentences than usual in these earlier prequels. And it's really funny, especially when he's angry and he's talking to Sidious. I forget what he says, but it's a really long sentence.
That's an Ender rule is.
Yeah, it's stuff like
and
that.
Quick enough it was.
Yeah, it's like, okay. But the Attack of the Clones has the Yoda fight.
Which was
with,
badass.
With Dooku. By the way, Dooku... So Christopher Lee is an actual swordsman, like he's classically trained fencer. And so he had them craft his lightsaber in that shape on purpose because that's the shape of his sabers. I know that Steve knows all this, but I'm just saying it for the show. And he does that like en garde thing. Like yeah, all of that salute. Was him. He's like, I know how to sword fight. Can I just fucking sword fight?
George, tell me what I need to do.
But I just have some interesting questions. I don't think we have time for it, but I haven't seen him at this age in my life. Like I have a 30-year-old brain now and I'm looking at this like this is actually pretty neat because this is how fascism does rise. But I never really processed before that, you know, they helped Palpatine to power. They asked for the vote of no confidence and they like and Jar Jar's dumbass is the one that votes that they have emergency power given to the Chancellor. Mm-hmm. And they create the clone army so that the Republic can have the power to take back control from the separatists. Mm-hmm. All of it was handed to him, right, by the good people. And like that's what happened with fascism as we know it in the, you know, first half of the 20th century. And I think that's how it would go down. And like, well, so that's pretty cool.
George Lucas is pretty open about how a lot of his inspiration for writing the prequels, not only is what happened in the 40s with Germany, but also with what was happening in America in around 2000 with the Iraq War. And
sure.
The Senate was relieving Congress was giving a lot of its powers of declaring war and everything to the executive branch, which was the Bush administration at the time. So it's like a naked, like when you think about it, it's like a very political series of movies, which I always laugh at. People are like, why is Star Wars woke and political now?
Yeah, it's like,
always
dude,
been,
bro.
Dude. Like, oh, God.
But
I'm begging you to pay attention to your fandoms.
I'm really curious about the power dynamics, and I know they really weren't thinking about it, but it's like, there's some really cool things. They allude to Yoda being the best swordsman in the world, right? Which I guess he is.
Mace Windu is technically
the
best.
They say Mace Windu for sure.
Mace Windu is better?
Yes.
Well, because when they're in the
skills of Windu and the power of the force of Yoda, right?
Yeah, Yoda's the most powerful in the force, but Mace Windu is the premier duelist. That's why he's able to defeat Palpatine in Revenge of the Sith.
He does defeat him, and that I'll get there in a second because I got questions. But in the speeder, when they're chasing the changeling bounty hunter, arrogant Anakin makes a quip like my sword, because this is how he acts. My sword skills rival Master Yoda. And And then Obi-Wan's basically like, you think so, little bitch?
I don't think you do.
But anyway, so he brings that up. But it's like Obi-Wan has defeated Darth Maul. He later he defeats Darth Vader twice in canon now that we have the Kenobi show. And so it would seem to suggest that he's one of the best to ever do it, right? But he cannot beat Dooku. Can't. Tried twice.
Dooku
fucks him up.
Dooku is also supposed to be, I think, Mace Windu and Dooku are supposed to be like, Dooku's the best duelist out of all the Sith Lords you see.
Dooku was, Yoda's Padawan, right?
Yes.
And
he was Qui-Gon's master.
I didn't know that. I didn't even remember that he was a Jedi at one point. But then he left to go be a politician and everybody was cool. So you can leave the Jedi. I don't want to be a Jedi anymore.
He technically was. Yes, you can. But he was also from a royal family. And I think his whatever passed away. So he was in charge of a planet called Sereno, I think. So that's why he's a count, because he is literally the count of an entire planet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he basically is the same character as he is in Lord of the Rings, because he's like a powerful old family dude who just thinks he's on the winning side and he makes a calculated move to what's inevitable. Same thing that Saruman does, right? And then tries to get Gandalf, aka Obi-Wan, to join him.
Your love.
I don't know. I just felt
the
like
Youngling's leaf.
Revenge of the Sith is awesome in parts, but I don't think he sold Anakin's turn he's supposed to at all. Like, he builds up this fear of Padme dying, and the vision that he gets is ultimately because of the choices he makes, ironically, and that's sad, not in avoidance of them. But that moment where Windu beats Sidious and Kenobi decides to cut Mace Windu's arm off.
You mean Anakin?
Yeah, Anakin decides to cut Mace Windu's arm off. That is so, I know I'm going way long on this, but I was fucking, I guess I've never seen this as a 30-year-old. I'm like, that's a leap. That is too far. Like, I am not believing that this dude at all. And like, Palpatine is so fucking creepy. And like, Anakin would have to be an idiot for that to work. You know what I mean? Like, he hangs out with him every now and then, and he's like, you got a pretty sweet ass. You ever thought? He's like, oh, thank you, master.
Yeah, you're pretty badass.
This guy's my friend, I think. He likes me way more than Kenobi. Like, no, you've been with the Jedi for like 12 years, meditating every day. Like, to be so quickly duped by the smallest of prods, it annoys the shit out of me. Because that dude's clearly, and at one point, after the fucking fight with Mace and the electricity that Mace is able to, because Mace is stronger than him, which I love, he like fucks up his face and becomes the Sidious that we know, right? That dude's definitely not a good guy. Look at his fucking face. And then
then he gets up and he's like, go kill kids.
He's like, okay, master. And then he's like, which I get that he's like, if he's choosing to be evil because he thinks that'll give him the power to keep people he once loves from dying, there's a flag there too. Then that's believable. But he thinks he's good because he's arguing with Kenobi later, right? And he's like, I knew the Jedi would try to take over.
From my point of view, the Jedi are evil.
Like, no, that dude's fucked up face is on your team. You're definitely not the good guy. Like, you realize that, right? Like, yeah.
That is Team Sand. You join Team Sand.
You just killed a bunch of kids. That can't be the good side.
There's a moment when Anakin has to realize in Revenge of the Sith, where he's like, okay, go kill the Jedi. You think they're evil. Oh, but also, so I've been in charge of the Confederacy this whole time. Can you go kill those guys for me? I started the war, but same side.
Yeah, it's like so obvious. And then the whole motivation is he's like, if you want to have the power to save your wife, join me. And he's like, okay, I do want that power. That power sounds dope. I don't actually know how to do that, but together I think we can figure it out. That's his fucking line. And Anakin's not mad at all. He's just like, yeah, for sure, master. We could figure it out. We're both smart dudes. Your face is a little fucked up. But hey, with your brain and my face, we can go a long way.
I'm sorry,
I'm calming down now. But
then it becomes my new empire at some point.
Well, that's the thing, is I think Anakin's thinking like, hey, I can save Padme, but also like, I'll kill the emperor and then Padme and I can rule it. I think that's what he's thinking.
I think so. That's the whole point of the Sith, right? One to have the power, one to crave it. Mm-hmm. As Darth Bane set up or whatever. I'm learning all this.
That's how all Sith masters have to kind of assume their end will be, is that their apprentice kills them.
I also hate the idea. I told you this off air, that this old dorky politician has been studying under Darth Plagueis somehow. And I know that there's a story that tells how that happens, but I'm just confused.
It's a pretty good story, actually.
I'm confused how that happened. You know, he's like running for office and his off time, he's like killing pod kittens and stuff or whatever he's got to be doing. I don't know. Yeah, apparently pod racing. You can edit all of that out. I just had to get that out. I'm just like, I've never seen this as an adult and I have questions.
I love it, man. Any chance to talk about Star Wars?
But I was really sad. I know it's a tragedy. It's ultimately a Shakespearean level tragedy, but I would have much rather seen a bunch more movies with buddy cop Obi-Wan and Anakin. And I would have much rather seen a bunch more movies with all the Jedi doing Jedi stuff. Mace Windu being really cool.
Chris, have you ever seen the show Clone Wars?
I haven't. Is that what that is?
Basically, it's all of the Clone Wars. I just can't
get over the animation I don't like.
Yeah, so watch a couple. I can send you like all the episodes because some are real shit. I can send you the list of these are the episodes you should watch that you will probably like. And you'll get used to the animation really quickly. And then towards the end of the series, the animation is actually really fucking good.
You know what? I'll watch them. Send them to me. I might even watch the whole show now that my son's really into it.
Because the last four episodes of Clone Wars, the like season finale four-parter, is some of the best Star Wars ever.
You said that.
And there are some amazing, and it really kind of, it adds a lot more depth and breadth to Anakin's turn, their friendship, how Obi-Wan knows that he and, Padme are a thing. And he just like, doesn't say anything cause he's a bro. It introduces Ahsoka and it shows her character arc, which is actually really, really good throughout the course of the series. And that's why she's a fan favorite now. And you can see a lot
turns
of
turns out being
stuff.
A bro, not a good move.
Yeah, apparently not.
Well, I wish you would have pulled him aside and been like, Anakin, I think you're putting the pussy on the pedestal.
Don't put the pussy on the high ground. But the show also gives some really, really good context to the clones and the clone troopers and their role as characters. And that adds a whole nother layer of tragedy to the whole story that is wonderful.
It was really upsetting to me that Palpatine frequently associates with all of the top ranking Jedi masters and no one knows that he's a Sith.
Yeah.
Clouded the dark side is. No, you're really bad at this, bro. He was sitting right the fuck there and you didn't sense any disturbance. Like when Order 66 happens, he has a fucking straight gas attack. Like Yoda falls over and starts farting all over the place because he can just so disturbed by the force disturbance. But you can sit right in front of the Sith Lord.
I can't remember what it is, but there is a canon explanation. It's not said in the movies at all, but there's
all he says is clouded.
Explanation for like how the dark side works is something where as a light side user, you're not.
It's like a UAV blocker.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah. Where they just they know it's somewhere close to them, but they can never pinpoint what it is. And in the
only
novels,
other guy in the room, maybe.
There's an amazing. So the novelization of Revenge of the Sith is amazing, but there's also a prequel to that novelization that talks about how they're like on the heels of discovering who Sidious is. And it's actually really fucking compelling. Like they're like so close to figuring out who it is and they like know it's someone in the Senate. And most of them are like, we're pretty sure it's Palpatine, but we can't say that. We can't just like come out and be like, Palpatine's a Sith. Like they have to get.
Well, they do start to suspect him. And then unfortunately they ask Anakin to spy on him. Right.
Yeah.
Which doesn't work out.
Because the Jedi Order is a mistake. And that's the point of the prequels of the show, that the Jedi Order was so lofty and aloof, and they didn't know what the common people wanted. They were too beholden to the politics of the time. That's why a Jedi Order like that fails, because you're kind of telling people to disassociate from what makes you human, which is your attachment.
Ultimately, he kind of did bring balance to the Force,
and that was the point. Was like he brought balance to the Force because
he killed all the Jedi. He
killed all the Jedi, and going forward, Luke would, you know, not make the same mistakes. But then the sequel trilogy happened. It's like, oh, okay, maybe
he does.
Maybe not.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. I get it now. But that is kind of neat. And there is a line when they're in the spaceship and it's Mace Windu and Yoda and Obi-Wan, I think. But it's like Yoda's like, misread the prophecy, maybe we did. And Mace Windu, like Samuel Jackson, makes this face like, And it's just like, that's the whole thesis, is that they did. And in fact, the Chosen One is about to fuck shit up. Anyway.
Technically, he is the Chosen One, but you're not going to like how he gets there.
His choice, not so great. Not so great. No! I love Palpatine's little face at the end, too. pretty sure you killed her.
I like how your Palpatine is just a nerdier Yoda.
Let me tell you just about the nerds.
It's basically what he is. I love that actor. I forget his name. Ian McDermott.
Yeah.
He sounds like a nerd. McDermott. McDerpy derp. I had some logical leaps, but ultimately what I started to say, how I started was that it was a great time with my little kid. It was fun. But anyway, I think I fucked up and that's all the time that we have. Anything you guys want to say?
No, I love you guys.
That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
You want to thank the patrons, Andy?
I would love to.
Andy's going to thank the patrons.
I got some patrons to thank. First off, we're going to thank A. Wells. We're going to thank Double A, Aaron A. Double R, Aaron A. Aaron B, Aaron K, Aaron L. Adam C, Adam R. Amanda, Amelia, Andrew, Andy, keep the name proud. Angela, Annie H. Arcade Shenanigans.
Shenanigans?
Shenanigans. Ariana, Ashley, Brenda, Brittany S. Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Carlo, Carmelita, Casey, Katarina, Chloe, Cody, Cryptoholic, Danielle, David, E. Lopez, Emily, Enza, Erica, Irvin, Gavin, Glenn, Hannah, Heath, Jacqueline, Jacob, Jade, Jake, Jared, Jeanette, AJ, Jenny, Jessica, Jimmy, Joel A, Joel D, John M, John R, Jordan, Josh, Jungle. Alicia, Candace, Katarina, Kate, Katie, Kayla, Kelsey, Carrie, Kevin, Kiki, Kimberly, Kirsten, Kyle, Lady Pris,
ooh, a lady,
Lee, Lisa, Marcus, Michelle, Mike, Mindy, MJ, Monique, Nick, Orion, Paula, Phil, Reese, the Reed family.
The whole Reed family.
The whole family. Robin, Samantha S, Sandra A, Sarah, Sergio, Shay, Stephanie, Stephen V, Tamara, have we decided how that goes?
She's brand new. I don't know.
Tamara.
Write in if we pronounce that incorrectly.
Toby, Thomas J, Thomas V, Tyler, Will, and Zach.
Zach Attack.
Thank you.
Zach Attack. Thank you all so much. We love you. Bye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.